Chapter 5. Meandered a glorious river for several thousands of miles. This river was of unspeakable depth, and of a transparency richer than that of amber. It was from 3 to 6 miles in width, and its banks, which arose on either side to 1,200 feet in perpendicular height, were crowned with ever-blossoming trees and perpetual sweet-scented flowers, that made the whole territory one gorgeous garden. But the name of this luxuriant dell, and was the kingdom of horror, and to enter it was inevitable death, *8. Said the king. We left this kingdom in great haste, and, after some days, came to another, where we were astonished to perceive myriads of monstrous animals with horns resembling scythes upon their heads. These hideous beasts dig for themselves vast caverns in the soil, of a funnel shape, and line the sides of them with rocks, so disposed one upon the other, that they fall instantly, when trodden upon by other animals, thus precipitating them into the monster's dens, where their blood is immediately sucked, and their carcasses afterwards hurled contemptuously out to an immense distance from the caverns of death. *9. Pooh, said the king. Continuing our progress, we perceived a district with vegetables, that grew not upon any soil, but in the air. *10. There were others, that sprang from the substance of other vegetables. *11. Others, that derived their substance from the bodies of living animals. *12. And then again, there were others, that glowed all over with intense fire. *13. Others, that moved from place to place at pleasure. *14. And what was still more wonderful, we discovered flowers, that lived and breathed, and moved their limbs at will, and had, moreover, the detestable passion of mankind for enslaving other creatures, and confining them in horrid and solitary prisons until the fulfillment of appointed tasks. *15. Saw. Said the king. Quitting this land, we soon arrived at another in which the bees and the birds are mathematicians of such genius and erudition, that they give daily instructions in the science of geometry to the wise men of the empire. The king of the place, having offered a reward for the solution of 2 very difficult problems, they were solved upon the spot, the one by the bees, and the other by the birds. But the king keeping their solution a secret, it was only after the most profound researches and labor, and the writing of an infinity of big books, during a long series of years, that the men mathematicians at length arrived at the identical solutions which had been given upon the spot by the bees, and by the birds. *16. Oh my! Said the king. We had scarcely lost sight of this empire, when we found ourselves close upon another, from whose shores there flew over our heads a flock of fowls a mile in breadth, and 240 miles long, so that, although they flew a mile during every minute, it required no less than 4 hours for the whole flock to pass over us, in which there were several millions of fowl. *17. Oh fie! Said the king. No sooner had we got rid of these birds, which occasioned us great annoyance, than we were terrified by the appearance of a fowl of another kind, and infinitely larger than even the rocs which I met in my former voyages, for it was bigger than the biggest of the domes on near Seraglio, most munificent of caliphs. This terrible fowl had no head, that we could perceive, but was fashioned entirely of belly, which was of a prodigious fatness and roundness, of a soft-looking substance, smooth, shining and striped with various colors. In its talons, the monster was bearing away to his eyrie in the heavens, a house from which it had knocked off the roof, and in the interior of which we distinctly saw human beings, who, beyond doubt, were in a state of frightful despair at the horrible fate which awaited them. We shouted with all our might, in the hope of frightening the bird into letting go of its prey, but it merely gave a snort or puff, as if of rage, and then let fall upon our heads a heavy sack which proved to be filled with sand. *Stuff, said the king. It was just after this adventure that we encountered a continent of immense extent and prodigious solidity, but which, nevertheless, was supported entirely upon the back of a sky-blue cow that had no fewer than 400 horns. *18, that now, I believe, said the king, because I have read something of the kind before, in a book. We passed immediately beneath this continent, swimming in between the legs of the cow, and, after some hours, found ourselves in a wonderful country indeed, which, I was informed by the man-animal, was his own native land, inhabited by things of his own species. This elevated the man-animal very much in my esteem, and in fact, I now began to feel ashamed of the contemptuous familiarity with which I had treated him. For I found that the man-animals in general were a nation of the most powerful magicians, who lived with worms in their brain, *19, which, no doubt, served to stimulate them by their painful writhings and wrigglings to the most miraculous efforts of imagination. *Nonsense, said the king. Among the magicians were domesticated several animals of very singular kinds. For example, there was a huge horse whose bones were iron, and whose blood was boiling water. In place of corn, he had black stones for his usual food. And yet, in spite of so hard a diet, he was so strong and swift that he would drag a load more weighty than the grandest temple in this city, at a rate surpassing that of the flight of most birds. *20, twaddle, said the king. I saw, also, among these people a hen without feathers, but bigger than a camel. Instead of flesh and bone, he had iron and brick. Her blood, like that of the horse, to whom, in fact, she was nearly related, was boiling water, and like him, she ate nothing but wood or black stones. This hen brought forth very frequently 100 chickens in the day, and, after birth, they took up their residence for several weeks within the stomach of their mother. *21, fa, lal, said the king. One of this nation of mighty conjurers created a man out of brass and wood and leather, and endowed him with such ingenuity that he would have beaten at chess all the race of mankind with the exception of the great caliph, Harun al-Rashid. *22, another of these magi constructed, of like material, a creature that put to shame even the genius of him who made it, for so great were its reasoning powers that, in a second, it performed calculations of so vast an extent that they would have required the united labor of 50,000 fleshy men for a year. *23, but a still more wonderful conjurer fashioned for himself a mighty thing that was neither man nor beast, but which had brains of lead, intermixed with a black matter like pitch, and fingers that it employed with such incredible speed and dexterity that it would have had no trouble in writing out 20,000 copies of the Quran in an hour, and this with so exquisite a precision that in all the copies there should not be found one to vary from another by the breadth of the finest hair. This thing was of prodigious strength, so that it erected or overthrew the mightiest empires at a breath, but its powers were exercised equally for evil and for good. *Ridiculous, said the king. Among this nation of necromancers there was also one who had in his veins the blood of the salamanders. For he made no scruple of sitting down to smoke his chibuk in a red-hot oven until his dinner was thoroughly roasted upon its floor. *24, another had the faculty of converting the common metals into gold, without even looking at them during the process. *25, another had such a delicacy of touch that he made a wire so fine as to be invisible. *26, another had such quickness of perception that he counted all the separate motions of an elastic body while it was springing backward and forward at the rate of 900 millions of times in a second. *27, absurd, said the king. Another of these magicians, by means of a fluid that nobody ever yet saw, could make the corpses of his friends brandish their arms, kick out their legs, fight, or even get up and dance at his will. Asterisk 28, another uncultivated is voiced to so great an extent that he could have made himself heard from one end of the world to the other. Asterisk 29, another had so long an arm that he could sit down in Damascus, and indite a letter at Baghdad, or indeed at any distance whatsoever. Asterisk 30, another commanded the lightning to come down to him out of the heavens, and it came at his call, and served him for a plaything when it came. Another took two loud sounds, and out of them made a silence. Another constructed a deep darkness out of two brilliant lights. Asterisk 31, another made ice in a red hot furnace. Asterisk 32, another directed the sun to paint his portrait, and the sun did. Asterisk 33, another took this luminary with the moon and the planets, and having first weighed them with scrupulous accuracy, probed into their depths and found out the solidity of the substance of which they were made. But the whole nation is, indeed, of so surprising a necromantic ability, that not even their infants, nor their commonest cats and dogs have any difficulty in seeing objects that do not exist at all, or that for 20 millions of years before the birth of the nation itself had been blotted out from the face of creation. Asterisk 34, analogous experiments in respect to sound produce analogous results. Preposterous, said the king. The wives and daughters of these incomparably great and wise magi, continued Scheherazade, without being in any manner disturbed by these frequent and most ungentlemanly interruptions on the part of her husband, the wives and daughters of these eminent conjurers are everything that is accomplished and refined, and would be everything that is interesting and beautiful, but for an unhappy fatality that besets them, and from which not even the miraculous powers of their husbands and fathers has, hitherto, been adequate to save. Some fatalities come in certain shapes, and some in others, but this of which I speak has come in the shape of a crotchet. A what? Said the king. A crotchet, said Scheherazade. One of the evil genii, who are perpetually upon the watch to inflict ill, has put it into the heads of these accomplished ladies, that the thing which we describe as personal beauty consists altogether in the protuberance of the region which lies not very far below the small of the back. Perfection of loveliness, they say, is in the direct ratio of the extent of this lump. Having been long possessed of this idea, and bolsters being cheap in that country, the days have long gone by since it was possible to distinguish a woman from a dromedary. Stop, said the king, can't stand that, and I won't. You have already given me a dreadful headache with your lies. The day too, I perceive, is beginning to break. How long have we been married? My conscience is getting to be troublesome again. And then that dromedary touch, do you take me for a fool? Upon the whole, you might as well get up and be throttled. These words, as I learn from the Saturnate, both grieved and astonished Scheherazade. But, as she knew the king to be a man of scrupulous integrity, and quite unlikely to forfeit his word, she submitted to her fate with a good grace. She derived, however, great consolation, during the tightening of the bowstring, from the reflection that much of the history remained still untold, and that the petulance of her brute of a husband had reaped for him a most righteous reward, in depriving him of many inconceivable adventures. End of text A descent into the maelstrom. The ways of God in nature, as in providence, are not as our ways, nor are the models that we frame any way commensurate to the vastness, profundity, and unsearchableness of his works, which have a depth in them greater than the well of Democritus. Joseph Glanville. We had now reached the summit of the loftiest crag. For some minutes the old man seemed too much exhausted to speak. Not long ago, said he at length, and I could have guided you on this route as well as the youngest of my sons, But, about 3 years passed, there happened to me an event such as never happened to mortal man, or at least such as no man ever survived to tell of, and the 6 hours of deadly terror which I then endured, have broken me up body and soul. You suppose me a very old man, but I am not. It took less than a single day, to change these hairs from a jetty black to white, to weaken my limbs, and to unstring my nerves, so that I tremble at the least exertion, and am frightened at a shadow. Do you know I can scarcely look over this little cliff without getting giddy, the little cliff, upon whose edge he had so carelessly thrown himself down to rest, that the weightier portion of his body hung over it, while he was only kept from falling by the tenure of his elbow on its extreme and slippery edge. This little cliff arose, a sheer unobstructed precipice of black shining rock, some 1500 or 1600 feet from the world of cracks beneath us. Nothing would have tempted me to within half a dozen yards of its brink. In truth, so deeply was I excited by the perilous position of my companion, that I fell at full length upon the ground, clung to the shrubs around me, and dared not even glance upward at the sky, while I struggled in vain to divest myself of the idea that the very foundations of the mountain were in danger from the fury of the winds. It was long before I could reason myself into sufficient courage to sit up and look out into the distance. You must get over these fancies, said the guide, for I have brought you here that you might have the best possible view of the scene of that event I mentioned, and to tell you the whole story with the spot just under your eye. Here now, he continued, in that particularizing manner which distinguished him, ye are now close upon the Norwegian coast in the 68th degree of latitude in the great province of Nordland, and in the dreary district of Lofoten. The mountain upon whose top we sit is Olsegen, the cloudy. Now raise yourself up a little higher, hold on to the grass, if you feel giddy so, and look out, beyond the belt of vapor beneath us, into the sea. I looked dizzily, and beheld a wide expanse of ocean, whose waters wore so inky a hue, as to bring at once to my mind the Nubian geographer's account of the Mare Tenebrarum. A panorama more deplorably desolate no human imagination can conceive. To the right and left, as far as the eye could reach, there lay outstretched, like ramparts of the world, lines of horridly black and beetling cliff, whose character of gloom was but the more forcibly illustrated by the surf which reared high up against its white and ghastly crest, howling and shrieking forever. Just opposite the promontory upon whose apex we were placed, and at a distance of some 5 or 6 miles out at sea, there was visible a small, bleak-looking island, or, more properly, its position was discernible through the wilderness of surge in which it was enveloped. About 2 miles nearer the land, arose another of smaller size, hideously craggy and barren, and encompassed at various intervals by a cluster of dark rocks. The appearance of the ocean, in the space between the more distant island and the shore, had something very unusual about it. Although, at the time, so strong a gale was blowing landward, that a brig in the remote offing lay to under a double reefed trysail, and constantly plunged her whole hull out of sight, still there was here nothing like a regular swell, but only a short, quick, angry cross-dashing of water in every direction, as well in the teeth of the wind as otherwise. Of foam there was little except in the immediate vicinity of the rocks. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.